हरिः ॐ सहनववचु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 63. The example of misunderstanding a rope to be a snake is mentioned in the Mundakya Upanishad, but it is meant to explain the error of identifying the body with the soul, since the soul is actually a spiritual particle. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Mamaivamso Jivaloke, it is due to illusion, the Vartavad, that a human being, like an animal, identifies the body with the self. This is a proper example of vivarta, or illusion. Right? So in other words, the principle of vivarta, that is a bona fide concept. So vivartavad is bona fide, it's just not how it's used by the maya bodies, by Shankara. Because there, when they give the vivarta, they're saying the world doesn't exist. It's an illusion that you think you exist, there's the individuality, that there's all these relationships and all that. So that's, they say, is what's the illusion. So here, then, the Mundakya, and using the Mundakya Upanishad as the example. But here, then, it's being pointed out by the Acharyas that the Vivartavad, its actual meaning is where the soul identifies with the body. The soul's real, the body's real, but we're not the body. Does that make sense? That's the actual application of it. They've just misaligned it. So that's why Bhaktivinoda, of course, says, if you don't actually understand the meaning of Parinamavad, you can make this mistake. Right? So that you don't understand the transformation that's going on between Krishna and his energies. Then you'll think that all this transformation is an illusion. Right? It's identifying with it. That's an illusion. Right? Does that make sense? Somebody's tall. Fine. That's a fact. But if they identify with it, that's an illusion. Doesn't mean that when they give up that illusion, they become short or something. You know, no, that remains. This is a proper example of vivarta illusion. The verse atat vato nyata budhir vivarta yud it yudrita describes such an illusion. To not know actual facts and thus mistake one thing for another, as, for example, to accept the body as oneself, is called vivartavad. Every conditioned living entity who considers the body to be a soul is deluded by this vivartavad, right? So technically, all mundane persons, the animals, all the living entities, except for those who understand that the soul is not the body, they're actually, overwhelmed by this vivartavad. So they're technically vivartavadis, right? You know, that's just their philosophy. They don't understand it, they can't explain it, but they're following it.
But can you say that actually, according to this explanation, what mayavadis say, it's not vivarta as such?
No, it is, because they're just saying that so vivarta means illusion. So that the illusion that we are the body, we are our surroundings, our house, our money, our family, our country, you know, all these different things. That's all vivarta. So they'll say that's vivarta, but they'll also say that you think that there's anything existing is vivarta. They just take it a step further, that's all.
But
so they add the gyan to it.
But they also say Brahma Parinamavada.
That Brahman is the one that is transforming, but that transformation they take is an illusion. So that's the main point, is vivarta. It's not so much a combined, is that that means that you can say yes, but it's the Brahma Parinama means that Brahman has transformed. Brahman has become overcome by illusion. Therefore, then those portions that become overcome, those categorize themselves as individual jivas. Right? So therefore, it's not real. They're all Brahman. There is no illusion. There is nothing here. So they're taking it that this whole thing, you're thinking that this is real, but this whole thing is not. So they're just doing the Vivartavada on a universal scale rather than on an individual scale. Right? They accept the individual, but their focus is on the universal. But you'd think it would dawn on them that how is it there's unlimited living entities and there's this huge arrangement that all these living entities are within? You know? So that means the volume of illusion is great. So how is it that there's so much? You know? So that there has to be some control of that. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't just happen on its own. It wouldn't be so consistent. Yes. Because if the living entity themselves is creating the illusion, then each person's illusion would be different from the other because they're an individual. Right? If you take, it's all Brahman, so therefore it's all the same. But then the point is then those qualities of Brahman are shining through, that there's a consistency that all goes back to Brahman. So the point is, since Brahman can't change, then that philosophy actually doesn't work. That's why they've come up with another two or three philosophies to explain that. So in other words, when you find the fault with Brahma Parinamavad, then they come up with another one. And I think the latest one that's a couple of hundred years old is that there's one person who's dreaming all this. You know, yes, we'll say that that's Mahavishnu, but the point is his dreams are still real. You know, and so, yeah, and then when he you know, breathes back in, it all disappears. But otherwise, then, you know, you better be nice to everybody, because if you annoy them, then they may wake up and then you'll disappear. So if that's what you want, then yeah, be nasty to everybody. Maybe they'll all wake up or go around pinching everybody. You know?
Maharaj, for our definition of Vivartavad, you know, we consider the two things.
No, it's not our definition of Vivartavad. It's the definition, because it's Mundakya Upanishad.
Yes, Mundakya.
And we follow Mundakya Upanishad. The impersonalists, they misunderstand, misrepresent, because they don't understand Parinamavad.
Yeah. So, soul is real, body is real. Okay. And then identifying with the body is basically Vivarta.
It's not basically Vivarta, it is Vivarta.
It is Vivarta.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then when they say that the Jiva and the Prakriti are both illusory or Vivarta,
yes.
Then that theory of Vivarta of theirs must be based on some reality. What is that reality then?
No, they don't have a reality.
Because how can we have illusion if there is no reality? Because we can say that something is real.
Means Brahman is reality. That's all that there is. Brahman is reality. That's all they have. See, that's where all these different philosophies fall apart. Is up to the point of liberation, they all work pretty good. But once you get up to that level of liberation, that's where they all fall apart. All the six schools. Right? So that's the whole point, is depending upon how far they're taking it. Just like Shankya, the analysis of the 24 elements and how the elements work together. You know, minds from goodness, and so therefore how things function, and the modes, and all these things. What they're saying and what we're saying is exactly the same thing. The point is we'll take it that this is Krishna's arrangement, and this is happening because of his glance. So up to that point of that there is all the things there. In other words, up to Mahatattva, they basically all do pretty good. But after Mahatattva, that's where they can't function. Because that the Lord glanced at Prakriti, and that's why the 24 elements separated and all that. That he breathes out and that he, all these different things. Those, they can't accommodate. So their philosophy becomes incomplete. You know what I'm saying? It'd be just like, let's say, someone had a philosophy that, you know, the times tables through 10 were the same as what we used. But from the timetables from 11, then it was different. So it means up to 10, what we're doing, what they're doing is the same. But it's not that what they're doing is its own individual thing, is we're following the Vedic version. That's why it's the same, because we follow and they follow. But when it gets up to the times tables of 11, then they're not following. So when it gets up to this point of understanding Brahman, the Jiva, and Prakriti, at that technical point, that's where they're not following the Vedas. That's where it's Buddhism. So below that, they're applying it within the Vedic context. They're using the Vedic version to explain it, and it works below that point. But once you get up to that point, then their basis is Buddhism. It means they'll say Brahman, but it's actually the philosophy is Buddhism, they're not Brahmavadis. It means they may be called because they're into Brahman, and that way you can call them Brahmavadis. But technically, they're Shunyavadis. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, they'll say, I think, that they're Nirvishesha, but they're actually Shunyavadi.
Shunyavadi.
Yeah. But they cover it by presenting it as if it's Vedic, but it's not.
Mark?
Yes.
Well, the Vivarta Bhadis claim to identify with Brahman. It sounds like they identify more with illusion.
Yes, that's why they're Vivarta Bhadis, Maya Bhadis. Mm. This world is Maya. So they're focusing more on that than on Brahman. Because if they're focusing on Brahman, what does it matter if this is an illusion or not? You just absorb yourself in Brahman. So for all that, it's all an illusion. They spend a lot of time, you know, following all the rules and regulations that go with the illusion and considering themselves very special. But if they don't exist, why would they themselves be Narayan? You know? And if Narayan is only the best aspect of the mode of goodness, why would they want to be that when they could be Brahman?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you see there's all kinds of underlying attachments that are going on. And because of that, then the difficulties there.
So,
yeah. Every conditioned living entity who considers the body to be the soul is deluded by this Vivartavad. One can be attacked by this Vivartavad philosophy when he forgets the inconceivable power of the omnipotent personality of Godhead. But as soon as you think that he's not in control, he's not doing, this material energy is not him, then one becomes attacked by this Vivartavad. So that's when then all the problems come up. Because you can't explain anything then. And so then all these different philosophies come up to try to explain this core part. Where did it all come from? Right? Does that make sense? But if it's understood, it comes from the Lord. And he transforms by his will through his energies. And he and his energies are non-different. So then all this makes sense. But if not, then one gets distracted by all these other kinds of varieties of philosophy. How the Supreme Personality of Godhead remains as he is, never changes, explained in the Isha Upanishad. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Isha invocation. God is complete. Even if a complete manifestation is taken away from him, he continues to be complete. That's the point, is he's complete. You can only be complete if you take things away, you'll still be complete. And because they're coming from that completeness, they'll have that completeness in themselves. Because that's the nature of the complete. But their dependent completeness, he's the independent completeness. Right? God is complete. Even if a complete manifestation is taken away from him, he continues to be complete. The material creation is manifested by the energy of the Lord, but he is still the same person. His form, entourage, qualities, and so on never deteriorate because they're coming from him. He is the source of everything, so how would they deteriorate? Right?
Okay, but when they say Parinama, the Mayavadis, for example, and they say that when he transforms, he becomes less. That's their claim, more or less?
Yes, because now he's acting as illusion rather than acting in as Brahman.
But we see even when people transform, for example, you know, somebody gives birth, the person does not become less.
Yes, they're not really well thinking about all this.
Because that's pretty straightforward.
Straightforward. A tree gives so many seeds, and those seeds become full trees. That doesn't mean that the tree becomes less. It's just these things are, if you think about it, that doesn't make sense. But at the same time, it's an attractive feature. In other words, the speculative path in which we make up the philosophy is attractive. Even though it doesn't mean anything, it's just that we made it up, it's better. You know, it's just like that, the concept in the 50s that man-made is superior to natural. Mm-hmm. Because we've taken natural and improved upon it. You know, like that, yeah. So therefore, then it's so much superior, like that. Yeah. But, you know, that didn't seem to work so good. But. So that idea is there. If I think it up, then it's better. You know, the philosophy is there. It's a little difficult. I put it into my own context, even though it's not complete enough to accommodate everything, and then I'll push that one thing. And then it'll make it all around that. It'll have that flavor, you know, like that, yeah. So that's why you see all these different, gurus in India. They all have their own thing, what they're into, you know. And then everything's about that. Like that. Srila Jiva Goswami, in his Paramatma Sandarbha, comments regarding the Vivartavad as follows. Quote, under the spell of Vivartavad, one imagines the separate entities, namely the cause and manifestation of the living entities, to be one with Brahman. This is due to complete ignorance regarding the actual fact. Right, so, the illusion is, as they think, the cosmic creation and the living entities are one with Brahman, so they're non-different, rather than they're separate. Right? The absolute truth of Parabrahman is always one and always the same. He is completely free from all other conceptions of existence. He is completely free from false ego, for he is the full spiritual identity. We're falsely identifying with things, because we're dependent, but he is free from this, because he is everything. Right? So that's the thing, is he's always one and the same, even though all these are his separated parts and parcel, he still remains the same. So whether we're an illusion or we're self-realized, it doesn't affect him. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then their idea is all these living entities are separate, but when they all go back together, then it's all, Brahman will be there. But then the problem comes is, okay, let's say I become self-realized, but then all these other living entities don't, so does that mean I have to wait around as Brahman until they do before I can actually appreciate the Brahmanness of being Brahman? You know? There's a lot of holes in their philosophy. Yeah.
Or if I become Brahman, then automatically everybody else should also become Brahman.
Then why is it everybody else has to work? Why preach? Just you sit down and just, you know, get it together, and then, you know, let everybody else enjoy, because it's an illusion anyway, so it doesn't exist, so what does it matter? So then you come down to this thing, is there's just the one. You know, that's what he said, that's the latest philosophy.
Who is the one?
Of course, ourself is the one. unless you're in the, you know, in the, unless you're a neo body, then okay. Then. But otherwise, then he is completely free from false ego, for he is the full spiritual identity. It is absolutely impossible for him to be subjected to ignorance and fall under the spell of a misconception, Vivartavad. The absolute truth is beyond our conception. One must admit that he is unblemished, that he has unblemished qualities that he does not share with every living entity. He is never tainted by the slightest degree by the flaws of ordinary living beings. Everyone must therefore understand the absolute truth to possess inconceivable potencies. End quote. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 7:122. Right. So then it is impossible to have a false imposition of the material world upon Brahman, like imposing the concept of silver on a shell, since no person can stand in front of Brahman to make this mistaken imposition, since Brahman is the greatest. Brahman is not like the Akasha, which is great and colorless, but which can have imposition of color, since Brahman cannot be perceived or understood like material Akasha. Furthermore, the existence of an illusion implies the existence of something different from the thing on which the illusion is superimposed. right? Because then, if there is illusion, if Brahman's not illusion, this is all an illusion, it's just illusion is imposed upon Brahman, where did the illusion come from? If everything's Brahman, there can only be Brahman.
Yeah.
Right? And if you say Brahman is the one that transforms, then where does the changeless aspect of quality of Brahman come in? Right? So right there, then their philosophy falls apart. Yes. So then you have to get that there's the Lord and his energies. So the energies that are there in Brahman, those transform. Brahman doesn't. Then this will work. So Brahman can't, nothing can be imposed upon Brahman, but the Akash can take on colors and other qualities. Even though it's just space and unlimited, it can take on that aspect. But Brahman doesn't, so the example is not good.
Mm-hmm.
The existence of something different from the thing on which the illusion is superimposed. Without the existence of something separate, there is no possibility of an illusion. Right? Because if there's only one thing, where's the illusion? This rock. It's an illusion to think that this rock is this rock, because this rock is actually this rock, not the illusion of this rock being this rock.
Oh, that's
yeah? Yeah, because at that point there has to be two. Now they say this flower is not the rock.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Now then you can have an illusion, but if it's there's only one thing, where does illusion come in? So that means then there's two. That means the illusion then is an energy, and the jivas are an energy. Yes, that's the whole point. Is there is Maya, there is his energies, and there is the Lord, but they don't even know about internal potency, because that you have to be devotional to understand. So they're perceiving of two of the Lord's energies, but not the third, because they don't accept the Lord as a person. So they can't actually understand the process. Right? Without the existence of something separate, there is no possibility of an illusion. In the end, therefore, the Vivarta theory postulates the existence of something different from Brahman. This is the fault in their theory. That's why we say there's only one. Krishna is non-dual. Because this is the fun part. They claim to be monists, where there's only one, but their philosophy is actually prescribing there's two. And we're personalists, where we'll talk about the two, but it's actually there's only one, because it's Krishna and his energies are non-different. Right? Yeah, that's where illusion comes in, where ignorance always switches things. So that's the whole point, is that due to ignorance, they think the one is two. So they don't understand how. So the Chintabheda-Bheda Tattva, then you have he's one, he's two, right? Simultaneously. So that works. You can explain everything. So that's the person. He's the person who everything expands from, and he remains the person. That's because he's God. He can do this. We can't do this. Sometimes the world is called an illusion to induce detachment from it. That's why I will say the world is illusory. Because it's the attachment to it that's the illusion. So even though the world is is factual, our perception of it and our value of it is illusory. Because we think it's something to enjoy. It's something separate from the Lord that we can enjoy. Like that. And it's always we'll enjoy it, and whoever we think should be enjoying it, and everybody else, you know, they can, you know, go enjoy somewhere else, you know. That's the fun part, is that we all think it's for our enjoyment. That the point is everybody's portion is the whole universe. So, you know, it's going to cause trouble, right? If the world was actually an illusion, there would be scarcity or excess of the elements and sense objects, since there would be no laws governing the workings of the world. Right? Because if it wasn't true, it's just an illusion, it's all in your mind, then there'll be more or less of things. There wouldn't be a consistency.
Right?
But that is to us. Everybody else thinks everything's fine. That's the thing. It's, you know. we're going nuts, and everyone else, what are you going nuts about? You know, so that's the point. That's given, that logic is given in Nyaya, by pointing out that if everything is not coming from the original Supreme, then that means everything, all these different living entities, how they would arrange if the demigods were in charge. There's 33 million. Being individuals, there'd be 33 million different things going on. Mm-hmm. You know, so your house would work in one way. You go out to somebody else's house, it doesn't work like that. You know, you go to your neighbor's house, and if you let go of something, it goes up and sits on the ceiling or something. In someone else's house, it goes under the wall. You know, which wall it goes on. So when you go to the neighbor's house, which way does your gravity work? And then somebody's house, there is no gravity. You know, like that. So in other words, if you go to a house and you see the house is kind of tied down by a rope, and there's a ladder going up to the house, probably avoid that house. You know? Go to the next one. Right? One should see irregular change in the state of object. One would see irregular change in the state of objects, right? Because it's all illusion. Whereas we see that their natures are actually regulated, right? They're always the same everywhere. It always works that way.
Use the example of the sun rises in the exact place every day. The show is regulated.
Yes, 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 yes. And you could also calculate.
Calculated and predictable.
Yes, yes. So that's the thing, it's all exactly the same. So that's what we can see, is there has to be one person controlling it. Because otherwise, if so many were controlling it, there would be a difference of opinion. Mm-hmm. Right? Like that. Therefore, Parinama, actually modification of Brahman, through Shakti is the teaching of Scripture. Right, so you're modifying Brahman through Shakti. In other words, Shakti and Brahman are non-different. Therefore, Brahman's being modified as Shakti. That's how you get everything. But because it's the Shakti of Brahman, therefore it has the consistent potencies and regulation that is there, because Brahman is the source of all these qualities. Does that make sense? Yeah. Well, good. Bhagavatam verse reference, 2.5.22. That's it? Oh, okay. That's after the incarnation of the first Purusha, Karanarana Vashayi Vishnu, the Mahatattva, or the principles of material creation, take place. And then time is manifested. And in course of time, the three qualities appear. Nature means the three qualitative appearances. They transform into activities. Right, so then you have the Lord, with his glance, then time, and then with time the modes, and from the modes then everything else happens. Right? Because until you get to the modes, you don't actually have material. You don't have the material energy as such, where there can be an illusion. Because if there's no modes, everybody is in Vasudeva Sattva. So then there is no illusion. Does that make sense? Yes. They may not have complete knowledge, but there's no modes. Yes.
Talking about illusion, is there any difference between Vaishnava illusion and this kind of illusion that we're talking about? Meaning that, you know, we have so many apasampradayas, and these people apparently they identify as Vaishnavas, but they're in illusion. Mm-hmm. So, is there?
You have to see where the point is, because it's just like, let's say you have a mathematical equation with so many elements to it,
right,
and all of them are correct except one. So we can't say that calculation is correct. It's wrong.
Yeah.
But where it's wrong, then that's what you see. So that's why the study of the 13 apasampradayas then shows the particular point where they're wrong. Like, let's say the Goswamis, you know. So it's because they're born in that family. They follow all the rules and do all the things that Vaishnavas would do, but because they're born in that family, that's what makes them that's what makes them Brahmas, and that's what makes them advanced devotees. So it's by being born in that family, they're already a guru. So if it's there, I remember, can't remember. Yeah, can't remember who it was. If it was a Vrindavan Goswami or if it was, you know, a Bengal Goswami, I can't remember. But I remember the person was there with his son, and I think his son had just turned 12. And they were going someplace for a program and all that. And so then he was going to start taking disciples because he's a Goswami. Like that. And so generally would be is that the parents are the disciples of the father. And so their children, now that they're ready for initiation, they'll be initiated by his son. You know, like that. That was the some kind of arrangement. You know, you have to work it out so there's no conflict, right? You know. So that will be the weakness in their process. They think that they're devotional because they're born in those families. Right? And they'll think that they're advanced. So because they follow the ritual, that's what makes them who they are. So when we don't follow all the rituals, then they'll say, well, technically we're not devotees. You know? That's the whole point. Because they think it's that. They don't understand it's the devotion that makes the rules and regulations of value. Does that make sense? So that will be their weakness there. Well, you know, so they're not following. They're focused on the rules, on the secondary, as opposed to on the primary. So unless you're focused on the primary, that's actually not so devotional.
Yeah.
So the more you're external, then so they're technically prakrita, right? So like let's say the sahajiyas, then. Their problem is because it's Vaishnavism mixed with Buddhism. And so, and the particular Buddhism is the I think it was the local East Indian form of Sahajayan. So then Sahajayan means that it's easy, Sahaj. So it's not about scriptures, it's not about authority and rules and all that, it's just about the bhav that you have towards you know, in their case, Buddha. So if you have that affection, you know, just like if you have affection for Jesus, then that's, you know, it's the same, that same sahajayan. It doesn't matter the script. You don't know anything. If you have the faith, then that's enough, right? So then, I guess they were born again Buddhists, right? Just they didn't play guitar, that's all. Yeah. So then... Ektar. Yeah. They introduce the Sahaja, they improve. Yes, true. They have the Ektar. True. Yeah. Yeah, if you took the born agains with the guitar and mixed them with hippies, then you'd get the Sahajas, right? Yeah. So then, you know, as long as Bengal was Buddhist, then they were flourishing. But then when Vaishnavism kind of took over, then they just integrated their philosophy into Vaishnavism. So instead of Buddha, you had Radha and Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Instead of, you know, Om Mani Padme Om, then they would chant Hare Krishna. Like this. And so then, you know, in that way then these things did. But the idea that we don't need scripture, we don't need authority, we don't need all these things, we just need that feelings, no rules and regulations. Which is funny is that they say there's no rules and regulations when it comes to, even just a funny example is in their kirtan. So when it comes to the melody and this and that, they don't worry about it. Like sometimes when you hear some of them, they really sing bad. Right? So, because if you talk about, no, it's got to be proper in the rag, oh, no, we're beyond all that. But their mridanga, that has to be exact according to the rules and mantras. Very, very funny. Mridanga is exact according to the rules, but singing, it doesn't matter. You know, like that. Yeah. So you get to, you know, how you say, it's coming up, the Gaur Purnima in the 5 days afterwards, we'll get to hear so much nice kirtan. Yes.
Maharaj. These people, like when the Goswamis left the planet and they left this Grihasthas in charge of their deities,
but they're not technically descendants of Goswamis, so why are they claiming that they're Goswamis and they're acting on behalf of
Goswamis? But that's the point, that's what makes them Apa Sampradaya, because they shouldn't be.
But who, like, did that...
Who authorizes that? Themselves.
So when...
You ever heard of what do you call it? In governance, I think they call it a junta.
Junta.
It's just some people come in and decide they're the new government. You know, or a coup d'etat. They just come in and take over. Who said they should be? They said.
Yeah.
And because the common person doesn't know and things like that, then they go along with it.
Okay.
You know. So that's the whole. But the point is that they're Brahmins, they practice the worship of the deity, so then we respect them on that platform.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have a problem. If we're respecting all living entities, we can respect them also.
Mm-hmm.
But the position that they're advanced and all that because they're born in that family, or they're Brahmin because they're born in that family, that's not according to the Vedic version. You know, it's just because the child's born in a high court judge's family, now he's automatically a high court judge?
Mm-hmm.
No, he has to become qualified. And if he qualifies, then yes. So there may be more of a chance that someone born in a Brahmin family or a Goswami family would more likely take up, you know, the proper practices. Now that may be. But it's not because they're born there. It's because of the association. But they're taking it because of birth. So that means anybody who would associate with them properly could take on those qualities. So that's the mistake. But it's popular. It wasn't created by them. That was already going on in India, you know, before that, that the caste Brahmins.
Yeah.
They were already there. These just are caste Brahmins, but because they're in the Gaudiya line, they're caste Goswamis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
That's all. But otherwise, then it's the same thing.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out who made it up. So.
No, that was made up before. Is that as its Kali Yuga progresses and the Brahmins weren't qualified, but they wanted the position, therefore then they just profounded that theory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know. But actually it's not by birth. You go by birth because you don't know what's there, but that means someone's born in a Brahmin family, then their child is dealt with like a Brahmin, and then they go to the school and are trained like a Brahmin. Now if they come out and graduate and act like a Brahmin, they're accepted as one. But if they come out and act as a Kshatriya, they're a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or whatever they act like.
Mm-hmm.
So then they're only labeled as such officially after graduation when they apply it. But before that, it's just by social convention. You just deal with them as their family.
Yeah.
Right? Unless it's obvious it's something else. You know, like that. Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.22.29. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O best among men, material nature and its enjoyer are clearly distinct. This manifest creation undergoes constant transformation, being founded upon the agitation of the modes of nature. Footnote 28. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that the Lord is distinct from Prakriti. There is extreme difference between them. Prakriti undergoes change, takes various forms, is dependent and revealed by another. The Lord does not change, is one form, independent and self-revealing. But you know about something because of something else. Krishna reveals himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's not dependent upon anyone else. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's, yeah. This is explained in four verses. The Lord is different from Prakriti, that is seen. The combination in the body, sarga, undergoes many changes, and its nature arises from agitation of the gunas. The agitation of the gunas means it is a transformation of Prakriti. The Lord, however, is only the witness without change, sardartha darshana. Okay, so the gunas then do, and we see the gunas are coming from Prakriti. Right, the Lord glances on Prakriti, then with the time element, then you get the modes of nature. And then the modes of nature acting with time, then you see transformation. Right, so the material elements are transforming, according to the modes because of time. So we see is even the material energy can't function without Krishna. Right? It can't, because itself, it's inert. It can't transform. So it's dependent. But as soon as the Lord's involved, then that transformation is taking place. Right? That's his nature, is he transforms. Right? Does that make sense? Sutra 1.4.27. Yonis cha hi giyate. Yonihi, the place of birth. Cha also, he indeed, giyate is declared. The Lord is the material cause because the Lord is described as the womb of created beings in the scriptures. Sutta Prakashika. In the ordinary world and in scriptures, the efficient and material causes are different, and it is usually necessary for many factors to be involved to produce one effect. But the Lord is an exception, since he is both of the causes. This is successfully established by the Sutra Kar. Right? Because as we see, as the Lord being independent, he does everything on his own. But the material energy being dependent, everything's based on, is dependent on the Lord. Right? So within the material energy, then you have that variety of what's there. Someone's causing and someone else is the effect and all these things. And so many elements are there. You can say there's many elements because, okay, there's a cause and effect, but that's within an environment that has been is the effect of someone else's cause. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So all these different things are there, and so it's all dependent upon each other, but Krishna being independent, it works according to his direction. So all these complicated things can all work together with him. Right? So he is the source of all this, right? Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta, the Shruti Shastra explains, Yad Bhuta Yo Yoni Yonir, okay, Pari Pashyanti Diraha. The wise see that Brahman is the womb from which everything was born. Mundaka Upanishad 1.16. Kartaram Isha Purusham Brahma Yonim. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original creator, the womb from which everything was born, Mundaka Upanishad. In these verses, the word yonim, womb, describes Brahman as the ingredient of creation. And the words kartaram, purusham, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original creator, describe Brahman as the creator. In this way, Brahman is described as both the creator, efficient cause, and the ingredient, material cause, of which the creation is made. This is confirmed in the words, Prithivi yonir oshadi vanas patmam. The earth is the womb from which the trees and plants are born. In both common sense and Vedic revelation, the creator and the ingredients from which the creation is made are considered always different, and it is not possible to say that the creator and the ingredient of which this creation is made are identical. However, the previously quoted passages from the Shruti clearly explain that in this case, Brahman is both the creator and the ingredient of which this creation is made, right? So, we see though there's a difference in the material energy of creator and created. But with the Lord, he is both. But because he is both, you can see a quality of that even within what we see within the world, right? Therefore, the example can be given of earth and the pots. Though the pots and earth are different, at the same time as there is the same quality that they're all the same. But as far as the transformation goes, you see there's a difference. Right? Yeah. In both comments, okay. However, the previously quoted passages from the Shruti clearly explain that in this case, Brahman is both the creator and the ingredient of which his creation is made. Bhagavatam verse reverence. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.26. The demigods prayed, O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone, being present in three phases of cosmic manifestation. Creation, maintenance, and annihilation. You are the he's the creation, maintenance, and annihilation. So he is past, present, future. That means he's time. Right? So that means for him, it's always existing. Right? You are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your faith favor, which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites, because they're always mentioned that they're not to be associated with. You are the active principle, the real truth, in all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you're known as Antaryami, the inner force. You are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone, for all time. Right? So it's not that this idea is, oh, these the Shastric things, those are for a previous age, they don't apply now. But then that saying is that Shastra is not Krishna, he's not everything, he's not the time factor, he's not what makes everything work, because if he is, then it applies now. And if it doesn't, then we're separating it off. Oh yeah, God created it, but now it doesn't apply. So that's deism. That's an incomplete understanding of the Lord. Right? Because he is the ingredient. So if he is the ingredient, he's eternal, that means the ingredient still has to be dealt with in the same way now as it was before. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the process. It doesn't change. Just like, let us say, let's say I have an old, you know, Model A Ford. Okay? And you have one of those, to start it, you have a little crank thing. You know, you stick it in the front, you know, that's connected with the whole, you know, drive shaft and all that, and you crank it, and then by that, then it starts. Okay? Now with time, then cars have put a starter on it and all that, and even it comes up to the time now where, let's say you have a Bentley or something like that, then you can just say, you know, start engine, and it'll start. You know, no key or anything like that. Of course, it has to be said in a Russian accent, but, you know. But the point is it's there. So, you can say, see, everything's changed, so those things don't apply. But at the same time, if you want to start a Model A Ford, how do you do it? Just say, start, and you have to get out the crank. It does not change. So whatever created by Krishna, it does not change. So whatever, wherever it manifests, it remains the same and acts the same now as it will in the future. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the thing. There is no change. So this idea is that we're separating means we're separating Krishna from the ingredient. We see how we'll say, we may be thinking, well, this is very esoteric. How does this apply? It's used all the time. This misunderstanding, because if he transforms, then it's him, and it follows his laws. Therefore, things don't change. What Bhagavad Gita said 5,000 years ago works today. Does that make sense? So same with the culture, same with everything. It's just you follow it, it works. You don't follow it, then you lack the benefits gained from following it. But not that following it today can't be done, because it's Krishna is time. Therefore, you are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone. So if he's equal, that means the instructions are for everyone. Right? So it's not that we say how it should be, because whenever we try to make our own laws, they don't work. Right? We follow the eternal laws, then they work. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. Footnote 29. Srila Prabhupada in his purport explains that real protection can be expected from the absolute truth and not relative truth. The demigods or devotees know perfectly well that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the true substance, whether within this material world or in the material world, or in the spiritual world. Srimad Bhagavatam begins, therefore, with the words Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Satyam Param Dhimahi. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:1. Vasudeva, Krishna is the Param Satyam, the Supreme Truth. The Supreme Truth can be approached or understood by the Supreme Method, as declared by the Supreme Truth. Bhaktiyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. Bhagavad Gita 18:55. Bhakti, devotional service, is the only way to understand the Absolute Truth. For protection, therefore, the demigods surrender to the Supreme Truth, not to the relative truth. Right, because the relative truth is that all these relative truths of the material world, right? But those are based on the Supreme Lord. So if we're making up the relative truth, then it's going to be very relative. And if it's based on the eternal laws, then it always applies. That's what it says, for all time. Right? Your instructions apply for everyone for all time. Right? Then you can apply them always.
Much with it's relative, but it's related to him.
Yes, but when,
relative and related to us.
Yes, so that's the whole problem. So it means that's why it said human life begins at Dharma, because then if you follow Dharma, then you're talking about human life. Because if you're not, you're following what you feel. What do animals do? Just follow what they feel, yes. Not what they're supposed to do. They follow what they feel. Yes. So that's all. So even though they may be very sophisticated and had developed a very sophisticated social system, it still doesn't mean that they're not animals. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the social system, if you check, like in a termite hill, there's millions and millions of residents there.
Very cooperative.
Yeah, very cooperative. Everything works very nicely. It's all very established. It all follows the rules. You know, so then how is that working? Right, because of Krishna is arranged. But the point is they're doing it simply because they feel like it. Right? So then it's when one does things because one's supposed to. This is one's obligation. One takes up the devotional process. So we see even there, if we take it even more, then it's until it's seen that it's about Krishna. But Krishna is the center of why you do it. That's the real thing. Because we can say, but also, let's say the person that follows the Vedic culture, they want to follow the Vedic culture. Mm-hmm. Right? So if we're taking that principle. And then the devotees, they want to please Krishna. But the difference is it's about Krishna rather than ourselves. So then we see as the devotees, it's about Krishna. It's not self-centered. For the pious person, it's self-centered, but it's accepting Vedic authority. Then you have those who are self-centered who don't accept Vedic authority. You know, so as you go down, it gets worse. There are persons who worship various demigods, but the supreme truth Krishna declares in Bhagavad Gita 7:23, Antavattu phalam te sham tad bhavat yalpa medisam. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. So here, the Vedic concept of intelligence is the effect of your using it, not actually volume that you have. Does that make sense? That's a very important thing to understand. It's how it's used. So if it's used correctly, that's intelligent. If it's not used correctly, that's less intelligent. Right? That's the whole point. So you can have someone who is very intelligent, like a scholar or an academic or a scientist like that, but they're misusing their intelligence. They're using technically, mechanically, the intelligence very nicely. But the problem is they're misapplying it. And so that's what the Vedas means by small intelligence. While you have a person who's very simple and doesn't have so much intelligence, you know, mechanically, then they're doing something in devotion, we'll say they're more intelligent, even though mechanically less is working. Right? So the Vedic understanding of more or less intelligence is based upon how it's being used in connection. In other words, we accept Shastra, that's the first level of intelligence. Right, we try to follow that in our life, then that becomes, you know, then that's the proper. When we understand that the body, we're the soul, more intelligent, but when it comes to the point of understanding the Lord in devotion, that's actually the most intelligent. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore, anything below devotion technically is less intelligent. Small intelligence, right? So the jnani is of small intelligence. The karmi is of even smaller intelligence. Right? And the Vikarmi is even smaller than that, right?
Mudha.
Huh?
Mudha.
Yes.
And what does it mean when the intelligence is equated to the Mahatattva?
The intelligence is equated with Mahatattva.
Yeah, I've read that.
Because when you deal with the Mahatattva, that's where everything is defined and delineated. So all the analytical aspects are based on the Mahatattva. Because there you have the 24 elements and the modes and how everything relates and what it's created. So the whole principal metaphysical structure of the universe is based on that. So then understanding that, applying according to that, that's using intelligence. Does that make sense?
Well, that description you gave just before about intelligence and what it really means makes it sound like the Prajumna aspect of Sambandha is more important than the Sankarshan aspect, to have the right mood. Goal.
Yes, the right, yes. Well, you can't apply it unless the Prajumna is there. So the point is that you may have knowledge, but you can't apply it unless there's Prajumna. So if you start with Prajumna, the right attitude, then you can get all the other aspects of Sambandha Jnana in place, and then you can apply it and get results. But otherwise, if you don't have the Prajumna aspect, if you apply the knowledge, then it won't give a satisfactory result. It may be technically according to what you wanted,
sure,
but it won't be satisfying, because we have to remember is ultimately we're the soul, not the body.
Mm-hmm.
So just because we got in identifying with the body, there's things that we want to get for the body, having endeavored and gotten them doesn't mean that we, the soul, will be happy. Because the body actually doesn't care. You know? Does that make sense? You know, you put on some certain clothes, then you try to walk out the door and you can't, and you walk back into the closet and all the changes, the clothes are changed, and then you can walk out. He goes, wow, what are you wearing today? Yeah, I would put on something else. My body didn't want to wear it, you know. So
that's ladies.
Huh?
That's ladies.
But that's the mind.
Still, but that's how you feel?
Yeah, that's true. You're extending it to the body. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you,
Maharaj. What's the difference between people who are attached to Varnashrama and people who are not qualified actually to follow Varnashrama? That's why they are rejected. So.
Okay, who's rejected and who is? Because rejected means that they don't really value it. They don't try to follow it. Because if they tried to follow it, then they would fit into Varnashrama. So anyone in the human form can follow Varnashrama. It'll be purifying and uplifting for them. But if they're not interested in it, that's how you get the antijas, or those who aren't really interested. Because for them, the value system is not the important thing. So that's why you can see as an antija can take up the Varnashram system, but generally by the modes of nature, they won't unless they come in contact with devotional service. It's not that they couldn't, but generally they don't. But in devotional service, then they can come in contact, they can take it up. And so as they follow it, it just makes the life and everything easier. Because Varnashram is for maintaining the body. So it maintains the body, the family, the social, all these, you know, the community, all these things that's based on Varnashram. But if we just make it on our own mental speculation, then the problem comes is we would have to then identify that my mental speculation is the universal speculation. It's the ultimate speculation under which, the umbrella under which all other speculators can find refuge, like that. It's,
I speculated where the whole world can
fit. Yes. Yeah, I think, therefore, we are. Like that. So then you see is there has to be a huge amount of false ego to go along with that. And then that's already a problem. The Vedic culture, when you apply Vedic culture with false ego, it doesn't work very good. So you may have Brahmins or Kshatriyas who get proud, like Duryodhana and Durvasa and all these, but it creates problems. So only when it's being used in its proper form, then it doesn't. So the main problem with the antijas is the mentality, the qualities that they value. You know, so lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, you know, these are like how they work. You know, it's just like, can you imagine a modern sitcom without jealousy, without lust, without greed? How would it function? You know, there'd be nothing to joke on. You know, there has to be someone in illusion. you know, like that, and everybody else can see it, and that's where the, you know, the dynamic, you understand, it's that's how it all works, is that these are the central points of the culture. So in so therefore Manu mentions that you can always see someone who's from the Antyogya culture because of the way they behave. So even if they have the dress and marks of someone from the Vedic culture, they will act as an Antyogya. So that's why in the Vedic, they're not allowed to function in that capacity, because they'll only make trouble, because what's their purpose? They have some ulterior motive. But now as a devotee, then the whole idea is one's following Varnashram to please Krishna. So even if one has the background, that Antyogya background, and it may have some ill effects, but the point is devotional service will purify and move you forward. So it's just a matter of time before all the qualities of the demigods manifest. So then it's not a problem for those who understand the system. Like that. For those who are outside the system, then they'll get disturbed. Like that.
Regarding the relative truth and absolute truth, the Hindus, they basically think that, when they approach the demigods for something, let's say Lord Shivji or like anyone else, then whatever they propose, you know, that is been fulfilled. You know? So for them, it is not relative. They understand it as an absolute truth. On the contrary, then
they understand which is an absolute truth?
The demigods.
The demigods, okay.
The desires have been fulfilled, you know. That yeah. is the universal truth. That is what the truth.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when they go to Krishna for the same demands, you know, when Krishna deals with each and every one differently, he doesn't give like how the demigods really fulfill, you know. He may not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they're completely reverse, you know, the definition of relative and absolute truth. So then,
but the point is that on the relative and absolute truth, someone approaches the demigods and gets in, it always works. But why does it work? Do the demigods sanction? No, Krishna sanctions. So because you've approached the demigod, then it works that way. So you've approached for that particular mechanical aspect. Then you're reciprocated in that if it works. Right? But if you go to Krishna, then it's not about what you've approached. It's about the relationship between you and him. So because for the demigod, whether what you get is good for you or not, you follow the rule, you get it. Right? Just like you go into a store, you buy something. The store owner is not identifying whether you're qualified to have, you know, a toaster or not. You know, it's not that they sit there and they scan and, oh no, you're the kind of guy that you know, when the toast doesn't pop up, you stick a knife in there and all that, and then, you know, electrocute yourself. So we're not selling you a toaster. No, you come with the money, you buy the toaster, and then they're fine, right? So because it's not about a relationship with the store. You understand? So it's not about a relationship with the demigod. It may appear because you get benefit there, so you like that store. But with Krishna, it's about a relationship between the living entity and him. So what's going to be good for that, that's then what happens, how it works. So it's a difference in what you want. We want a relationship with Krishna, and then at the same time, there's the material things. But they'll come when they should come anyway. It's just the other one, it appears, because otherwise you go to the demigod and it may take some time, then you get. You know what I'm saying? So whatever the time frame is there, you'll get whenever you're supposed to get anyway. So
we define absolute and relative based on the relationship with the Lord, not based on the material facilities being provided.
Absolute and relative is based on, do we see it in connection with Krishna? That's absolute. And we don't see it in connection with Krishna, that's relative. So the worship of the demigods, because the demigods are the ones fulfilling the desires, that's relative. But the demigods themselves, then they point out, it's because you are the supreme absolute truth, that's why it works. It doesn't work because they said so.
In the Gita, Krishna points out also that not only the devas give the fruit because he sanctions, but also we have the faith in the devas because he gives
us gives the faith.
Faith.
Yes, true. So even that whole faith in demigods, Krishna gives that faith. Because they're approaching Krishna as a demigod, so he gives that faith in that form. So whatever form that you approach Krishna in, is it's money or wealth or power or whatever it is, then you, Krishna gives you, if you follow the rules of, let's say, faith in money, by dealing properly with money, then he gives you that faith in money. But it's he's giving, so we can't function separately from him. So that's the absolute understanding. The relative is then we think it's the thing itself. Yes?
Marge, we have practical experience. This relative is very complicated. However, if we go into spiritual, following Mahaprabhu and his conversation with Ramananda Rai, then it gets really scary, because where they start, it's, you know, and Mahaprabhu rejects it like easily. That's where, you know, most everybody's trying, that's their goal of life.
Yes.
So how can we, you know, should we worry about it? Or?
But yes, we should worry about it. But how should we worry about it? Then what is the theme of that conversation?
What is the ultimate goal?
What is the ultimate goal? So, as far as devotees go, the ultimate goal will be what Lord Chaitanya in that conversation there, developing love for Krishna. Because developing love for Krishna, now that's something that is we can focus on, and that's our position. So pure devotional service is what we're trying to get. Now, how we situate ourselves. Lord Chaitanya is not rejecting the situation of being situated within and practicing Varnashram. He's just not accepting it as a ultimate goal or the absolute truth. So for us, then it's the more comfortable material situation to be in. It's better than being in a Malecha Yavana situation. Because of the human nature, the human nature is much more akin to the soul than animal nature. And so that's why then it's recommended. It, the results are much better and everything. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then it's that's what's going on there. It's not that much of the time devotees take it that, oh, Lord Chaitanya rejected Varnashram. He rejected it as a goal, but we see him and his devotees followed it very strictly. Right? So it wasn't that he rejected Varnashram as a practice, you know, for taking care or situating the conditioned nature. It's that's the goal. Then that's then what he's rejected, because for many, then practicing the Varnashram nicely, getting the results of that is their goal, like the Karma Mimamsas. That is their goal. Or you can say is that those, okay, dealing with Vaikuntha, it is the culture they'll follow there. So it is service for them. So then to situate themselves there, then that's how they express all their service, is through this Varnashram aspect. And so then that works very nicely for them. You know, and then they just add on to that the refinement of the Pancharatrik culture. But for us, then it's just, it takes care of the social, the material. Right? Then Pancharatra then regulates the spiritual, but for the purpose of getting to Bhagavat. So it's just, we just drop it down one, you know, because we're adding up, you know, so it just moves everything up. But it's not that it's not used. So yes, socially we may be trying to, you know, come to the platform of being able to use Varnashram, but the point of Varnashram is not itself the Varnashram that's important. It's that it's order of guru. It's what's recommended, what the Lord and his associates follow. That's why we're interested. It's not other than that. So it doesn't have a, it's not an actual goal. It's a goal within, yes, how to situate myself so that the material things go nicely. Because if everybody's just a brahmachari living in the temple, you know, or in a bus out on the road, then the amount of Varnashram necessary is very minimal. You know, the etiquette is there. But you know, devotional service etiquette like this. But the wide range of the Varnashram and its laws and all that, is not necessary because the needs are basically the same, right? It means they have, a few pieces of clothes, they have some place to put that, there's some place in the van that they can, go to sleep. They have their japa, when it comes to the Sunday program, they each get half a bucket of halava. It means you're good. There's nothing else. So it's just etiquette that, you don't take his halava, he doesn't take yours, like that, So minimal things like that. But when you get into the grihasta ashram, then, because the brahmacharya, you're not dealing with individual needs so much. It's just you're focusing on Krishna consciousness. You are an individual, but you're not expanding on the needs. Well, the grihastha ashram means that the needs are more prominent in that you need to follow up on them and engage them. Right? Because for the brahmacharya, they're either less so they can function, or it's less for now, and in the future after training, then they'll apply them. Because without training, how do you apply them nicely anyway? So there's no use trying to be a grihastha now if you're not trained, because then how will you apply it? You won't get any real result anyway, since you need to know varnashram and those things to apply it. So then the grihastha will apply, and the rules then govern so that all these grihasthas doing all the things they do won't bother each other, and at the same time the brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis will fit into the culture. So in the Vedic system, then you can say the grihastha is the central aspect of the whole culture, because it's from them that everything else comes, right? It means if grihasthas don't have children, you don't have brahmacharis. Right, and if grihasthas don't retire, you don't get vanaprasthas or sannyasis. Does that make sense? So they're the central one, because they make all the economic development, because that's what varnashram does. It is a progressive way to economically and socially maintain yourself that doesn't cause an obstacle for one's progress in devotional life or in self-realization. It's the only system that doesn't. Everything else is that it gets in the way, right? Because like we see in the modern, when you should be taking vanaprastha and kind of winding things down, after noticing that after a long life of grihastha ashram, that it's not actually working out the way you think and there's no real satisfaction, then the Vedic system is therefore wind things down, go into vanaprastha, because having applied all those desires, you can see that they don't actually fulfill the needs of the soul. They don't actually give satisfaction. Therefore, you can move forward into the vanaprastha situation. But the modern scenario is no, find something new, get inspired, go take a yacht ride, a yacht cruise in the, in the Caribbean, or, go climb Mount Fuji, or, whatever it is that's there, that's important to you. In this way, then they try to find that new life, but it's just a new life of sense gratification. So they had the original one they had as in their youth, and they tried to apply that very diligently. It didn't work out. So then the idea is just create a new one. Right? But this one, yeah. In other words, what I want to do in my life is the first one, and the second one is what I want to do before I die. So there's a slight adjustment, but basically the same point of just, trying to enjoy yourself. Then there's a, you understand? So it's not actually a very good system for God consciousness. How brahmacharis fit in, people like that, the modern thing, then they'll think that that's artificial. If boys and girls don't mix, how will they know how to interact? If that was true, then the West would be the perfection. The first world would be the perfection of grihastha ashram. It would be nobody from the Western culture, first world Western culture, would ever have any divorce or any problems in marriage, because they associated from, when they were, 11, 12, like that, and then they finally got married when they were 28. So many years. Like that, so 16 years of this, interaction, now they know what to do, like that. But it hasn't proven to be correct. So therefore we see is that point is destructive to brahmacharis and destructive to all the other, to grihasthas and all the varnas. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulties. The varnashram will work for everybody, but the modern only works for yourself, and even it doesn't work for you. You know? But at least then there's the idea it was I made a bad plan, you know. Not someone else made a bad plan and enforced it upon me, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in this way then the varnashram is used as the social tool and situation for the devotees. But it's not taken as the absolute. So yes, it'll take some practice to get that, but at the same time as how are we practicing? Because we're doing devotional service. In other words, as antyajas, we would not be able to practice the varnashram culture except because we have devotional service. Because mm-hmm. when you're working with pure goodness, then the other, you know, goodness will be included. But if we're working with passion ignorance, then you can't actually get the Vedic culture to function. Right? And so it's by performance of devotional service, then the varnashram will fall into place as long as we're willing to allow it to. Like that. If we're opposed to it, then yes, of course, it won't fall into place. We'll maintain bad qualities and all that, and it will affect our devotional service and our relations with others. You know, and then that comes into that point of what was made before. What was it? The previous one about the pseudo. You know, it's one of the aspects of the pseudo devotee is that they maintain the material attachments and profess those kind of things. You know, so for us it's just a part of there, because for devotees then they want to develop love for Krishna, but socially they may act in, you know, so many varieties of ways. So does that make sense? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So by rejecting Varnashram as a goal, as the goal.
Right.
Does that also automatically reject it as sadhana?
No, because just like, is the kitchen the goal? Or is food the goal? Right? So if food's the goal, does that mean it's not the kitchen? Do we automatically reject the kitchen and therefore we only eat a raw diet? Even then, because part of the kitchen is peelers and sinks and all that, we just eat it raw as we get it from the market. You know, just go out, buy a basket of stuff, put it on the seat next to us while we're driving, pick up a potato, start eating.
They're washed, maybe.
No, but washing requires a sink, which is all kitchen stuff. You know, we have to stick to our guns here. You know? You know, none of this compromise. You know, like that. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurapena. Thank you. Oh, yes.